Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Daniel Davis Deep Dive Roadshow edition, still coming to you from New York City. As it turns out, President Trump has finally lost patience and has given in to pressure, a lot of pressure from Europe, a lot of pressure from his own supporters, and he has just lost patience. And now he has finally done what so many have asked him to do, and he has brought sanctions on top of Russia, new levels of sanctions. You may recall Senator Lindsey Graham earlier this summer wanted bone-crushing sanctions, wanted to come and just do something that had never been done to Russia, even though all the sanctions in the 3.5 years before had not produced anything. But no, this time, says Senator Graham, for sure it will. And of course, that was echoed both in the capitals throughout Europe and definitely in Kiev from Volodymyr Zelensky. All of these folks, all of these entities have been putting pressure on Trump to do everything he can to put these sanctions on. And that, they keep claiming, is going to make the difference. And yesterday morning, Scott Vincent went on Fox News and explained exactly what was coming and why.
President Putin has not come to the table in an honest and forthright manner, as we'd hoped. There were talks in Alaska. President Trump walked away when he realized that things were not moving forward. There have been behind-the-scenes talk, but I believe that the president is disappointed at the where we are in these talks. So this evening or first thing tomorrow morning, we are going to be announcing a substantial increase in Russia sanctions. I'm not going to give you the exact sanctions, but I can tell you that this will be one of the largest sanctions that we have done against the Russian Federation.
Listen, I know oftentimes when you talk about statements that are made on television, they're just for public consumption. They don't reflect anything reality. That's just what they think the public wants to hear. But when that's what they say, you still have to take them at face value and at least parse the words based on what we see on the actions. And part of my concern here is that those words may actually reflect what they're thinking. I almost hope they don't, but only almost. Let me explain why. Because if they believe that, we have a big problem. If they don't believe that, we might have a bigger problem. If he believes what he says, that President Trump went to Alaska in good faith, he tried to have a negotiation, but he walked away when he saw that the things weren't working. Why would anyone think that heading into Alaska with no groundwork done, no foundation planted, no work done at the worker level, at the ministerial level at all, that you're going to walk out with the deal after 3.5 years at that time, that you're going to change the Russian viewpoint with nothing, with no inputs, with no offers, no changes whatsoever from the left other than the personality of Donald Trump? And, you know, I think I've shown you some of the clips over the months, last several months here, where a lot of people believe and have claimed on camera that the overwhelming personality of Trump can change the dynamic. His force of personality, I think that was the phrase they used, that can change it. Like all Trump has to do is just get in a room with somebody, that somebody being Vladimir Putin, and bam, he's gonna succumb. He's gonna give in to what the pressure is. And of course, you know, President Trump rolled out the literal red carpet, had the flyovers and all the big pomp and circumstances, greeted him with the big warm handshake and all that, lots of smiles, said lots of good things about him. And what a surprise, nothing changed after the end of it. I told you at the time, anyone who's paying attention would have told you, doesn't take any special understanding to be able to know that there was no chance that Alaska was going to produce anything, and it didn't. And then now here we are again. Now, here's where the big problem is. I said, if they actually believe it, because if you thought heading into Alaska that the force of personality of Trump was going to change Vladimir Putin, who is sharply focused on the actual balance of power and all of the leverage that's physically in his hand, and you think that that was going to change him, well, you saw it didn't. What are you going to do now? Now then, you have the same situation here. That was Scott Vincent, Treasury Secretary, talking about what was going to come. And then later in the day in the Oval Office, President Trump talked about what did come.
These are tremendous sanctions. These are very big. Those are against their two big oil companies. And we hope that they won't be on for long. We hope that the war will be settled. We just answered having to do with the various forms of missiles and everything else that we're looking at. But we don't think that's going to be necessary. We would like to see them just take the line that has been formed over quite a long period of time and go and let's, you know, go home.
What is troubling, the most troubling about that soundbite? He might believe it. President Trump may actually believe that these threats and the potential threat of Tomahawk missiles, which apparently is still on the table, though that's going to come with a big caveat here in a second, that threat is going to move President Putin. Because you just, I mean, even look, everything President Putin has said, and let's just go back to June of 2024. We could easily go back to even before the war in December of 2021 or at Istanbul in 2022. We could go back to all of those, and it's nearly the same every time. Just the conditions get a little bit worse as you go forward in time, but the fundamentals are still there. Root causes, demilitarization, denazification, no NATO. That's what they say on all these cases. Now, what possible logic, what rational thought could go into the statement President Trump just made? Just stop it on the current line. Everybody just go home. Forget about all the root causes. Zelensky, forget about the 1991 borders. Y'all, just stop. That's what he wants. And fine, if that's what he wants, I mean, everybody can want whatever they desire. That's something you can just create and generate in your own head, your preferences. But those preferences to be turned into reality on the ground have to comport to physical reality. It has to look at the balance of power. It has to look at the leverage and the capabilities possessed by all the different parties and then say, how can this be brought to fruition? How can you make this actually happen? That's not that hard of an analysis to make. And yet, you see, President Trump is just tired of it. He just doesn't want to mess with it anymore. So he doesn't want to deal with Zelensky. He doesn't want to deal with Putin. He just wants him to do what he wants to do. And so now he's saying, well, we'll try some sanctions, the biggest ever sanctions they have. And they're not that. We've done lots of bigger sanctions. And incidentally, this is also in conjunction today with the now a formal application of the 19th round of sanctions from the European Union. They have also done these are things like they're going to put more sanctions on the shadow fleet. They're going to sanction more specific ships. They're going to go after more Russian banks, more energy companies. You heard there, I think that it was Lukoil and Gazprom Neft, I think, were the two specific companies that the U.S. went after right there. And I'm sure the European Union will also double down on that. They're still looking at trying to steal the Russian frozen assets to try to take their money. I don't know if that'll ever work or not. Certainly a lot of people want to do it. But these things, you just keep thinking, oh, this is going to work. This is going to change Russia's mentality. But it never has. It never has at all. And I think some of the reason is because we know that this is incessantly put in Trump's ear by Volodymyr Zelensky every time they meet. Sanctions, 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 sanctions. He's just talking about it methodically, monotonously for months. He keeps saying it. And of course, you have Mark Rutte keeps talking about the Ursula von der Leyen, Kaya Kallas. I mean, the two that are like in his ear all the time, always making these public statements, Keir Starmer, Emmanuel Macron, Friedrich Merz. They all of these guys just monotonously keep saying it over and over. And as it turns out, even in Trump's ear, he also has some similar statements like that from his own inner circle. Gary has showed you a lot of times this picture of Lindsey Graham, loves to go golfing with Trump. He's a golf buddy. He's a good friend of his. He talks to him all the time. Here's what's been on his ear for months. This is back in July. You may remember this.
Putin wants to recreate the former Soviet Union, the Russian Empire. He wants to take countries that are not his. In the mid-90s, Ukraine gave up 1,700 nuclear weapons with a promise that their sovereignty would be respected by Russia. Putin broke that promise. He's not going to stop until somebody makes him stop. So Trump has been tough on Iran, who is incredibly dangerous, but they're in a weakened state. And Putin, your turn is coming. You know, Donald Trump is the Scotty Scheffler of American politics and foreign diplomacy, and he's about to put a whooping on your ass.
Yeah, see, that's what worries me, that that message may be getting through to Trump. Trump may be coming to believe that. Because if there's one thing that you've seen over and over, when Trump gets buttered up and when he gets talked about in flattering terms, it works. That's what happens. I mean, you've seen Mark Rutte has figured this out. He bends over backwards to just lather up Trump all the time, calling him, oh, you're like daddy. You remember that from the summer? Oh, you're like daddy. Everybody has to obey you. And everybody just butters Trump up every time they're together. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. You're amazing. You're wonderful. All this kind of stuff. They've all figured it out. And nobody knows it probably better than Lindsey Graham, because he knows where Trump's buttons are. He knows how to get him to move. And so he goes back to this Iran thing that shows, yeah, the way you did to Iran, man, that shows tough. That's what tough. And then the way you did to the Houthis and blew them up, the way you're blowing these speedboats up in Venezuela, that's awesome, man. You are a powerful man. All you got to do is the same thing to Russia. He is literally in his mind, because it's being fostered that way, that he's equating what happens in Iran with a strike. There was a so-called 12-day war, but that was primarily between Israel and Iran. We went in there for a day, basically one strike package. And you want to call that a war, and you want to say that that's what something that we have done, and we have accomplished something because of that. Or what we did with the Houthis in this Black Sea or the Red Sea, we just fired a bunch of missiles and then left because we realized it's not going to succeed. It's not going to do anything. And it didn't. They're still there today. You still haven't destroyed them. They were still interdicting ships in the Red Sea even after we stopped. And then now this nonsense in Venezuela, more on that later this afternoon. That is just, again, we have military capacity. We can just blow up boats because we want to. Forget about whether there's even anybody in them or not that's what was claimed, or if they're anything at all like it is. We just can. We got great video, so we do it, and then we just tell you what you saw regardless of what actually happened. And now then, you're trying, as Lindsey Graham here and others like him, are trying to convince Trump that it's all the same and that Putin is just like Iran, is just like Venezuela. We can compel them to our desire by just doing these simple little things here and then just saying, just end the fighting right here. That's what worries me, is that he believes that. Well, let me show you, though, what the Russians are saying. I mentioned President Putin's comment from June 2024. I'm going to show you that this is something from today. Earlier today, this is spokeswoman Maria Zakharova from the Russian Foreign Ministry, who directly answered this question.
We would like to confirm that the Russian Federation, when discussing the political and diplomatic
Hang on, I may have messed that up again. No, I might have done it right this time, didn't I? Yep, sorry. All right, go. Let's continue on.
Solution of the Ukrainian conflict. Consistently believes there is no alternative to achieving the goals of the special military operation announced in February 2022, including reliably ensuring Ukraine's neutral, non-aligned, nuclear-free status, its demilitarization and denazification, the development of reliable guarantees for the rights and freedoms of the Russian-speaking population, and the unimpeded activities of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church.
So you see, that's just the same exact same thing that we've repeated so many times. Nuclear, not aligned, no NATO. Protecting the Russian speakers. I forgot to mention there the one she said about the religious freedom inside of Ukraine for the Russian speaking people. Demilitarization, denazification. All that isn't. And of course, then that also is unquestioned. She didn't specifically mention it there, but they have in other places, which is the four administrative borders of the Oblast that they have annexed back in 2022. Nothing has changed. What does anybody think in this conglomeration here and all of this information and all of these sanctions that are going to be coming down that are going to change? What can anybody rationally do that's going to make Russia move off of all of those things because of a few threats of sanctions, so a few more sanctions. Do you not understand, folks, that because of these first 18 rounds of sanctions, all the other back-breaking sanctions that we've done that didn't break their back made their back stronger, that it taught them how to get away and to diversify their economy so that they're not subject to that. There's no rational path to do this. There's no way. See, here's what's missing. You saw Scott Bissent there a minute ago, this bold declaration, and obviously Lindsey Graham, who loves to make sound bites. But what none of them had done, what the president didn't do, what Marco Rubio hasn't done, nobody that I have seen done. I would love to see it, but I haven't so far, and I look actively for it. You tell me how, all right, these sanctions here on, Rosneft and Gazpromneft, these two companies, and this, whatever the Europeans have done, whichever specific ships they put in there. All right, these sanctions on this company will then cause this right here a negative impact. And then the company won't be able to buy this thing right here. And because they won't be able to buy it, then that will cause a concurrent offend extra issue over here. They won't be able to buy this. They won't be able to produce that. And so then that will then circle all the way back to the front line to where now then they won't be able to get the transportation. The trains won't be able to run. They won't be able to get the energy to the factory, and they won't be able to make it. So then that will mean less of the shales, you know, something like that, that kind of analysis. That is an absolute bare bones minimum obligation. If you're going to put sanctions on somebody and you say it's going to cause this and that will, quote, bring them to the table, and by bring them to the table, you mean bring them to the table on terms you want. Let's be clear on that. If you're going to make that argument, you have to be able to paint a detailed, literal, on the ground pathway to where that can have success. In the absence of that, then what you just have is wishful thinking. And that is where we are. Because there is no path to do that. All you're going to do is cause Russia to have to pivot somewhere. They'll do something different with their shadow fleet. They'll send in different ships if those specific ones are targeted. Or we'll have a situation where we ran into a little bit last time when France intercepted one of the Russian ships. And then you have the threat that, okay, how's about from now on we start transporting these things with a military escort? Russia does. And now you want to intercept that ship? You want to do something different? How about we have an armed engagement? That's where that starts rising up to the possibility. Will Russia do this? See, this is the second, third, the fourth order effects that you have to think before taking step one. And we haven't done it. And now we think that this is going to work out here. And I want to, aside from the sanctions here, I want to circle back around, because the other important aspect of this is the Volodymyr Zelensky part, because obviously he's the president of his country. So he's the one that decides how, when, or if they fight on the front lines against the Russians. And nobody has been more happy. I didn't have a chance to cut this soundbite, but there was this picture of him with one of the European leaders this morning when they were announcing their 19 security sanctions package. And Zelensky was just beside himself, just as happy, beaming as he could. You may recall, and I pointed out how when he was in that Oval Office or that White House meeting opposite President Trump, when he didn't get what he wanted, how ashen his face looked, whatever, was the exact opposite today. He was as beaming and happy as he could because he got what he wanted. Interesting thing that he said in that also, and let me show you something he said that right before that, I think on the 21st of October, that sets the stage for what he said earlier today. So obviously we've been talking a lot about Tomahawk missiles. And Zelensky has said, you know, this is what we need. This is what we need. This is what we need. That's going to change the dynamic. Just like they were, the Europeans and the United States have been talking about sanctions going to change Russia. Zelensky's saying, no, it's going to be those Tomahawk. That's going to get it done. Here's how he put it a few days ago.
Лінія фронту може бути початком дипломатії. Натомість Росія знову робить все, щоб зіскочити з дипломатії. І як тільки питання далекобійності для нас, для України, стало трохи далі, то майже автоматично Росія стала вже менш зацікавленою у дипломатії. Це сигнал, що саме це питання, питання далекобійності, дає, можливо, незамінний ключ до миру. Чим більше української далекобійності, тим більше і російська готовність закінчити війну. Зараз тижні, які це знову підтвердили, дискусія про томагавки виявилась сильною інвестицією в дипломатію. Ми змусили Росію показати, що томагавки – це саме та карта, на яку вони зважають.
See, he fell into the trap. I actually set this up a few days back. I said that somebody would do this. Turned out it was that somebody was Volodymyr Zelensky. When I said that somebody's going to say, oh, it was the threat of tomahawks that caused Putin to come to the meeting. Because remember, after Trump got on the phone call for 2.5 hours with Putin, then he said, hey, we're going to have a ministerial meeting possibly next week. And then we're going to have this other meeting with me and President Putin in Hungary and maybe even with Zelensky. And we're going to bring this war to an end. Zelensky calculated the only reason they were willing to do that is because of the threat of tomahawk missiles. So cool. Let me have those long range missiles. I'm sorry, Mr. President, what was that about tomahawks?
Well, the problem with the tomahawk that a lot of people don't know, it'll take a minimum of 6 months, usually a year, to learn how to use them. They're highly complex. So the only way a tomahawk is going to be shot is if we shot it, and we're not going to do that. And we know how to use it, and we're not going to be teaching other people. It'll be, it's too far out into the future.
So, yeah, you're not going to get the tomahawks. Or are you? Because I mentioned today, just hours ago, In Europe, Zelensky was talking about that, and the issue came back up with tomahawks, and people going, yeah, but Trump just said that, yeah, we're not going to do that. And he danced around it a little bit, but basically said, and with some justification, can I just say, that used to be the case with the previous administration. Biden kept saying, we're not going to do this, we're not going to give you that, we're only going to do this. And then some number of months, 5 months, 7 months, 8 months, a year, sometimes, then they end up getting it, whether it was tanks, whether it was long range fires, the F-16s. I mean, you name it, everything that they asked for early and then ended up not getting. Then later on, they got. Now, of course, as I was pointing out from the very inception, they were never going to make a difference on the battlefield because individual weapon systems is just background noise in this. It's all about the balance of power between the two sides at the national level. Who has the capacity to wage war? And that means all of it together, industrial capacity, finances, national will, and manpower. Those are the real things that have everything to do with who wins a war of attrition, which we're in. So getting a few F-16s or getting a few ATACMs, whatever, is never going to make the difference here. Even less a handful of Tomahawk cruise missiles. Even militarily, forget about the signal that they could send and the escalation they could cause, but just the fact that they exist there won't have any impact on the front, any more than the F-16s did, any more than the ATACMs or the Storm Shadow or any of that other stuff. All that stuff came, used on the battlefield, had no impact. This one won't either. But you see that Zelensky's thinking, yeah, but they used to tell me that the same thing. And then you see Trump also used to say this stuff. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. And then he talks him into it. Nobody takes Trump at his word. Nobody thinks that whatever you said today means anything. So they're going to keep going down that path, and he's going to keep going. You can see that Zelensky thinks he's going to get it in the future. But here's the problem. It's not going to make any difference then either, any more than it did when he got the F-16s or all those other weapon systems. It won't make any difference, certainly not in the number that we're talking about here. Trump has even admitted that for a few times, but that may not stop him from giving them to him later on. I mean, he's done all these other things. Why would he stop there? And someone who is so famously impatient and just wants what I want right now. I mean, it's the same thing what we're doing with this whole issue of destroying the East Wing of the White House, frankly. You know, there was a right way to do it, and then there's a wrong way to do it. And he didn't want to wait for the right way. It takes too long. So I'm just going to like bring in a truck, a bulldozer, and just start ripping the building to shreds. Forget about trying to do it the right way. That's just one issue there, but that's indicative of how his mind thinks. I don't want to wait. I don't want to do it the right way. I want what I want, and I want it right now. That's how he operates. But where is this going to go then? What's going to happen here? President Trump wants what he wants, and he wants it now. That's fine as far as it goes. It works if it's the White House. that works if you can just order a bulldozer to come in and an earth moving equipment and just start ripping the building to shreds. You can do that. You can just tell your Treasury Secretary impose these sanctions today, and you can do it because you have the power to do so. But whether that's going to have any impact and change anything is a radically different question, and one that President Trump seems unwilling to acknowledge or answer. But it'll be answered for him, because I'll just tell you, none of the fundamentals have been changed here. All of the power dynamics remain irreversibly, irrevocably on the Russian side. It is still a war of attrition. However happy and glad of a face Volodymyr Zelensky has today, because, yay, we got a 19th sanctions package. I mean, just, you know, at some level, I mean, even these guys, don't they have to go 18 rounds before, had no impact on the front? And then now we want to say, like Scott Bessent did at the opening of this show, this is going to be the biggest one we've ever done, and this one will finally make a difference. This will force Putin to, quote, come to the table for a just and lasting peace, i.e. what we want. And we're going to ask the guy that has the power, the manpower, the industrial power, the air power, the drones, the armored vehicles, all of those things, more than the other side. We're going to ask that side, because we want to put a little pinprick pain on them and cause them disruption and difficulty for their economics again, that somehow they're going to get tired. They're going to be impatient. Folks, that's not going to happen. There's no rational reason to believe any of that. So the most likely result of this is going to be the mere continuation of the war. And we have statements we can't ignore completely from Dmitry Medvedev today. He came out again and said, hey, this is an act of war. These sanctions that you're doing, especially if you talk about seizing some of these Shadow Fleet ships, that potentially could be an act of war. And I know when Medvedev says stuff, everybody in the West, in the elite world, just rolls their eyes like, that guy, he's just nothing but a blowhard. That's a dangerous thing to do. He has said a lot of things that are full of hyperbole, a lot of things that have not come to pass. But it is not wise to say nothing he ever says will come to pass. Because you have to understand, he says nothing that's not cleared by the Kremlin first. He's not a free agent. He can't just say what he wants no matter what Putin said. There's a reason why he's allowed to say some of these things. And you don't know when that point may come that he's like, this time that we're actually going to act on this. We don't know when that's going to be. And then, of course, we'll be watching for Putin himself. I haven't seen any statements that he's made so far, but we did see Maria Zakharova, so I'm sure it's going to be something along those lines, which is the same thing he's been saying since 2021. And so what we can expect to see is that the ground forces will continue on with their slow, very methodical destruction of the Ukrainian armed forces on the front line. You're going to see Pokrovsk continue to go more and more gun. Possibly within a month, because they've gone through the hardest part of the cities already. So it's possible they could have it within the end of November, possibly even. They're certainly picking up speed into that. You have Kupiansk up in the north. You have Volchansk up in the Kharkiv area. So there's continued to make fronts all along. Zaporizhia has continued to see additional area. The glide bombs, I don't know if you've seen this, the glide bombs, Russia has made some improvements on those, and so now the range is extending out. Now then they're hitting parts deeper inside of Ukraine than they ever did before, because they're figuring out how to do it. They're extending the range. Ukraine continues to try and block that with electronic warfare to make it less. And for a while, they actually did make them less capable. But now, as is always the case, you have action, reaction, counteraction. And now Russia has figured out how to undo those changes, and now they're having success again. Ukraine will keep doing its part, and they'll probably figure out again how to minimize it again. But you see this rotation just keeps going on. They have the bombs, they have the technology, and they have the troops, and they're going to continue to use them. Ukraine cannot win a war of attrition. Ukraine cannot survive a war of attrition. The pin in your hopes that a few sanctions will make pain points for Russia, or that it will force Russia to the table, you've not been paying any attention at all. And it's irrational to think Russia would do that. It would be crazy for Russia to do that. And if there's one place you can't use the moniker crazy, it's on the Russian side. You can hate them. You can think that they're evil and wicked, however you want to, whatever you want to say from your perspective. But what you cannot say, if you're being honest, is that they're crazy. They're very, very rational and methodical and thorough and detailed. They do pay attention to what happens on the ground. They do go three and four steps down, second, third order effects all the way through. And they calculate what they're doing. And their mistakes that they make, and there are plenty of them, but they recognize them, they stop doing them, they try something new. That's how war works ordinarily. And that's how this one's going to go. So President Trump is not going to be satisfied. Sanctions are not going to work. I don't know whether he's ever going to use the tomahawks or not. I certainly hope he doesn't. And I just pray to God that we get this war over with as fast as possible so that we get the threat of escalation off the table. Because as long as the White House and Brussels and Paris and London and Berlin keep taking these provocative actions and keep doing things to keep pressing the issue further with Russia, with no chance of changing the war, they do have a chance at some point of provoking a bigger strike by the Russian side. And I just pray to God we avoid that, because otherwise all we're doing is setting up a bigger loss. And I'll say this again, because it's you've got to keep this on the front of your mind. All these actions that the White House is doing, all these actions today in Brussels, all they're doing is getting more Ukrainian men killed. Volodymyr Zelensky is the chief architect of the death of his country. It's long since past the time where he gets credit for trying to put up the good fight. That day passed long, long time ago. And so now he is a willing participant in the destruction of his own country. I don't care if anybody likes that or not. That is the cold, hard, cruel truth, because he will not do the only thing that makes any sense and bring this war to a negotiated settlement on the best terms that he can get, which are ugly. And instead of doing that, he's going to leave the only other path available, which is the physical destruction of his people and his country. That's the legacy that he will leave to his countrymen, however this war ends, whenever it does. That's all we have for you today, folks. I appreciate you paying attention here. I'll be back with you later on today, because there's also some things that were going on yesterday in Venezuela. And it's actually not just Venezuela, but in Colombia too. Things are getting a little bit more dicey in our own hemisphere. More on that this afternoon. Appreciate you guys. See you next episode on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.